Well, so what a terpene is think about you have your plant matter or your flower, your bud, and then you have those little crystals sticking off of them, and those are resin heads. Well, on top of the resin heads, there's like a little membrane, and it's that's the terpenes. And terpenes are in lots of organic, you know, all over. They're in fruits, they're in plants. They're occurring naturally, just the way they occur naturally in the cannabis plant. The terpenes that are in the cannabis plant, we've found that have a lot of amazing uses. And I've done a lot of studying with Ethan Russo and some of his works, where he talks about how certain terpenes can be an antidote for when you get too uncomfortably high. They can mitigate the Delta 9s. And so I am really fascinated with how terpenes are able to work with the cannabis plant, work in the cannabis plant. And one of the other things that's been pretty interesting is seeing people separate the terpenes from the actual THC. It's super interesting, and that's kind of where my passions are lying, and I'll be talking about today.
Hello. My name is Wes, editor of Northwest Leaf and Oregon Leaf magazine. To start off about the cutting edge of cannabis, I always like to tell people the cutting edge is now, but we are in the ground floor time of this industry. There is no time better than now to get involved in the cannabis industry. In any way, shape, or form, there's jobs being created. This is a new industry, and things are constantly being innovated and becoming better. And so I think, you know, leaving it at that as far as jobs in the industry, jump in. As far as the cutting edge, kind of what Allison talked about in terpenes, I think terpenes are going to become a major talking point for people when they start thinking about the flavors and the essence of cannabis. And this September, I'm actually hosting an event in Portland called Tannins and Terpenes, where people are able to come out and sample small amounts of wine and cannabis and learn about the flavors and the essence and the entourage effect of cannabinoids. And I think that in the future here, we need to fight to have cannabis use anywhere where people can have alcohol use. And ultimately, we all know cannabis is safer than alcohol. And so I think that the cutting edge of this is going to be normalizing our plant, normalizing our culture, and then letting our culture rise from being suppressed to being an actual alpha culture, because we're great, happy, healthy people, and pot makes people better. And I really believe that. And I think the future is very strong for all of us. Thank you.
Well, my interest, really deepest interest with cannabis, is trying to determine the evolution of the plant under domestication, and even earlier. But ever since the beginning of the Holocene and the world started warming up 10, 12,000 years ago, humans have had a relationship with cannabis. And we've molded it in different ways. And one way, since we're talking about terpenes, we'll talk about that. We have two, basically, in Marx and my minds and other people, we see that cannabis is divided into two species. And I'll give you a little taxonomy here real quick. Cannabis sativa is rope. It's not dope, okay? So calling dope varieties sativas is a misnomer right out of the gates, okay? We see that the other part of cannabis, the vast majority of it, probably 90% of the cannabis that's on Earth, is cannabis indica. That consisting of three subspecies. The two that interest us here are indica subspecies indica, which everybody calls sativa, the narrow-leafed, longer maturing, and we'll talk about in a minute, different terpene profiles from the broad-leafed ones. That's subspecies afghanica. And that's what everybody calls indica. And there are reasons why we came to this misnomer, but kindly in the future, reserve sativa for hemp, for rope, and indica and afghanica rather than sativa and indica for the drug varieties, okay? Now what we have today is a blending of indica and afghan, of narrow leaf drug varieties and broadleaf drug varieties. And along with these two gene pools came different cannabinoids and also different terpenoids. Terpenoids being, we should just say terpenes, actually. Terpenoids are a subgroup of the terpenes that have been modified chemically, okay, and both are in cannabis. as well as a lot of aroma ingredients that are not terpenes, but they're aromatic, all right? And those things all are what make the different highs in cannabis. This is what we're finding. THC by itself is boring. And until these CBD varieties came along, these new medical varieties, not just abstracts of social varieties, better to call them than recreational varieties, we've come to this mix, this hybrid mix. It's a mishmash. As Michael Bakas said the other day, it's a trailer park model, okay? The first generations out of the mishmash of a trailer park are some handsome boys and girls. And after that, it gets a little inbred, you know? They should have left home a little earlier. So that's what we're dealing with cannabis. You have this complete range from nearly narrow leaf varieties to nearly broadleaf varieties. And a few land races that built all these Afghan land races or Mexican, Thais, Colombians, Jamaicans, the narrow leafed ones. And those are almost gone now. There's still a few around. But what we have left is a real mishmash. With the terpenes, it's become a non-tourage effect. So many varieties have a little bit of all the terpenes. This is sort of how the breeding has gone. It's an accumulative kind of thing. So it's hard now to find, for me at least, to find varieties that are unique in a particular way. They're strong as hell. They smell good. They look good in a bag or a bottle. But the diversity is really minimal. And that's the final message, terpene diversity, all the diversity. We need to enhance this. We've managed to come down to such a narrow genetic base for what we're working with. We're actually, despite all the varieties you see, kind of on the edge of blowing it. You know, we need to bring in some new juice. The trailer park needs new residents.
Where do they come from?
Well, they're going to come from those shoe boxes and cigar boxes. And remember those little film cans where they stuck their seeds in? Well, go dig in your bloody closet, you know? Go get them out. Sprout them. And if you can't sprout them, the Phylos Bioscience Cannabis Evolution Project would love to sequence the DNA that's in them. So sprout them. Give us some leaves if you sprout them. But if they're not going to sprout, dry them off real good and let us have them, and we'll get some science out of them.
Right on. Well, this great panel must have sparked some good audience questions here, right? Who's got one? I'll come to you in a second here. I do want to say our next panel very well follows this one. These people are talking about all the great innovations that can take place in cannabis. But we don't have it. Oh, okay. I'm being corrected. So, coming up next is the Ngayo Show.
Hi. I was at the Patients at a Time conference in West Palm Beach in May, and one of the panels there, some scientists were talking about new research that seems to show that the terpenes actually interact with the cannabinoids for the medical effects. And there may be advantages, for instance, to smoking over vaping for medical purposes. And I was wondering if any of you have heard anything about, you know, research with terpenes having some medical effect, and what do you think of that?
I can take it quickly from my perspective. Terpenes are really important to topicals, like terpenes like beta-carophyllene and linalool actually help the cannabinoids to absorb through the top layers of the skin. So to kind of build in a transdermal, if you will, effect. And that definitely adds to the efficacy of everything that I do. So super important. And built in and all natural. You don't have to use something like a DMSO to do the same thing when you could use a terpene naturally.
I would also agree. There's myrcene, which has been found to be really amazing for pain relief. And you find that in like your cushions or your broader leafed plants, where you are going to have higher myrcene. And so I definitely see myrcene as being really amazing for chronic pain treatment.
And we're kind of lucky with that, because myrcene, the high myrcene, high limonene terpene classes, if you will. This will be published pretty soon, not by me, but it's coming up. And the biggest class statistically are the Kushes, the OGs, this sort of stuff, the myrcene dominant ones. And this is probably largely because skunk number one that came out of the Netherlands a long time ago has exactly that profile. And caryophyllene would be the third prominent one, but about 85% of the terpenes in skunk number one are myrcene. So that's the root to a lot of the varieties we have. It came to us a long time ago. The prominent terpene in hop, in the hop plant, in hops cones, is also myrcene. So this is an early evolutionary thing back when they were probably before hops and hemp were separate plants. So it's kind of far out that way, too.
And you have that Israeli study that was published last month where they compared a CBD extract with a CBD isolate. You know, so you're comparing the whole plant extract versus just the CBD alone, and the whole plant extract proved far more effective in their studies. And I think that'll get duplicated with THC or anything else. The Sativex is a pretty much whole plant extract, you know, because THC alone is a very boring drug.
It really is. Pure THC is just not interesting at all. And you just get these extracts, these that the labs are doing these days, where they're getting out every terpene, and they get them so pure, they stick the terpenes back in. You overdo that a little bit, and it's called solvent abuse. You know, you got to get a little tiny amounts of these things for them to be effective and for them to be safe, I would think, and to taste good and work.
Kenny Morrow does a lot of separation of the THC and the terpenes. And I have to say that I don't really like, it's the only chance I've ever had truly had to separate it. And the THC really isn't good by itself.
So I've been somewhat fearful of what I'm going to talk about. So for the last couple of years, there have been people working on creating a blank and then reintroducing terpenes into it. You can actually harvest, you know, the terpenes that are in cannabis are not significantly different than the ones in other botanicals. And then creating a THC blank and then making a compounded medicine out of it. Right. Which is, you know, breaks my organic heart, but is seemingly where the pharmaceutical industry is going to run with this. And so what is the state of that? I mean, that seems to me to be the mainstream cutting edge of the people who are not going to want to smoke products and would that feel more comfortable with a scientific compounded medicine and, you know, allopathic Western medicine rather than this.
I think they're deluding themselves. It's like John said earlier today. As soon as these medicines are perceived, these plants are perceived as medicines, they're going to be legislated that way. Don't you think the Food and Drug Administration is just dying to get out the only thing they've ever seen that's both a food, touted to be a food, and a drug? And they're going to go nuts with this. And I think people who are cubbyholing themselves to the scientific side, if you want to call it that, and trying to look like legit medical people. We tried this years ago in the Netherlands. We tried to make a Marinol equivalent. You would not believe the hassles. We allied with Merck Generics. They couldn't get it into the United States. They have all the lawyers and all the money on the planet, and they couldn't do it. So if you think you're going to get a naturally derived THC, and not you, but all you other folks out there are doing this, you are barking up the wrong tree and wasting your time and money is the advice I'd give you right here and now. Go on with natural formulations and get away from trying to look straight.
But we were just 20 years ahead of our time, Rob.
I think, you know, it also though, your question of our pharmacological companies are trying to take this plant from us. And every time I look at GW Pharmaceutical stock and I see it going down because Sativex is tanking, I get a big smile. Because it truly is about the natural plant. But being real, you know, they are trying to use terpenes. They are trying to use flavonoids. They are trying to find ways to create a cannabis capsule. And, you know, I don't know if that is good or bad. It comes with kind of good and evil. And it's a question we have to ask ourselves as we move forward with this as a medicine and as a recreational substance, which direction we want it to go. And if we want to keep the industry in small business hands and out of big pharma, then we'll prevent you know, the perversion of our plant.
Well, you know, I love hearing GWB being called Big Pharma. And I also wonder why you say that Sativex isn't a natural plant.
Well, Sativex is a one-to-one synthetic THC and CBD.
Not at all chemical. True, Wes.
They're both naturally derived from two different varieties and blended later.
Then Rob gets credit for
the
breeding.
The CBD is grown outside in the UK, and the skunk number one that they use for their production is grown indoors, and in supplementally lighted greenhouses. And they blend them later.
Let's see. Next question is from Jerry here, who's doing the hemp convention in Oregon Medical Cannabis Cup, October 10th and 11th in Portland.
Thanks, panel, for being here today. Through our research and development, what we're doing out on the farm in Oregon growing hemp, we're real proud of, to be doing this in Oregon, first of all. We come through a lot of leaps and bounds to get to where we've gotten.
Yeah.
But we've been in this industry for a little bit, just like all of us. So what we found out is the more that you take the plant out of its natural state, it's kind of like the worse off you are. If you can leave that baby in its natural state, it's a blessing from the higher spirits. And so I'm just saying, I've taken and purchased natural limonenes and different types of substances and tried to add them back in and played around with it with a lot of different edible products and whatnot. But once you start playing with Mother Nature, I'm a farmer by trade. You're playing with the man upstairs. So I'm just telling everybody here, from what I know, don't mess with it. Let it happen. Thank you.
Yes. First, I wanted to thank you all for being here. And I wanted to ask if you think that in the future we'll have these technologies to put other to rescue the terpenes from our drying plants, in a way.
That would be interesting. I'm gonna let you take this.
Now, this is really interesting. There are a couple of things that have been worked on to get the terpenes back out of even a grow room, okay?
Yeah.
And you should be able to condense the terpenes back out, the smell that you get in a grow room that you're exhausting, that irritates your neighbors and alerts the police. You should be able to get those back out. They do it in the citrus industry. They take, that's why we have so much limonene. They basically take it out of citrus production and we have heaps of natural limonene. The other technique that I've heard about is you know when you make water hash and the water smells really good and then you dump it down the drain? Well, that's kind of a loss there too. So there are ways, I don't know exactly how it's being done, but there are people who have figured out ways without solvents to get those terpenes back out of the water. They're doing some kind of partitioning. It's not that difficult if you're a organic chemist guy, but yeah, without doing anything except getting them back, they're getting it. And they get the whole suite. You know, the funny thing is that we're so used to losing terpenes that if you take the terpenes you took out of the water hash and you put them all back in that water hash where you think they belong, way too many terpenes. You know, it's that's overdosing it too. So actually, if we start collecting them, we'll have a surplus of them.
Nice.
It's just like all the other industries.
It's where you're losing a lot of terpenes whenever you make bubble hash. It's pretty amazing.
Or put the bag in your pocket.
Or as the Oregon farmer said, anytime you mess with it at all, you know, you're getting far. Every time you smell your weed, you're losing terpenes, all right?
Potency power.
No, you got to keep it in glass jars and in a cool, dark place and rarely ever open it.
Yeah, and little containers, so you just open a little bit at a time. Sealamils in the freezer.
Yeah. Not everyone agrees with the freezer, but you know.
In and out of the freezer, no good.
I like it.
In once, out once, beautiful.
I got to thank our panel. That's all the time we've got.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. Warner, Allison Grayson, Wes Abney, Rob
Clark.
You didn't
get to smoke any terpenes. Sorry. We were going to.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to the Hempozium today. Sunday, 2015, we have the Ed Gallo Show coming up right now. But... oh, I'm sorry. Hey, I just got cut off, and I'm told we can keep going. Isn't that great? Yay! All right. So, who's got a question? Let's see. Susan was next.
And while we're going for that, I want to mention something that Oz said earlier. Terpenes are great facilitators for getting compounds across membranes. Quick example. Do you remember Hall's mentholyptus cough drops? Yeah. That's in there to get the soothing sugar down your throat and get the stuff in there. It's menthol is a terpene found in cannabis, and eucalyptol is from eucalyptus. Most terpenes are named after their primary source. Limonene is from limes and lemons. Those are classic examples. We've used them for years and years in over-the-counter products to make them work better, to facilitate their use.
So can I just say one more thing about terpenes and that blank slate kind of situation? Because in my process, when I'm formulating, when I'm extracting it, and I'm starting to do some straight-up extraction, but mostly it's fat infusion, and I lose almost all of my terpenes in that. In my process with topicals, it's different than adding terps back into vapor, you know, to a concentrate, to vape, or whatever you're going to do. These terpenes are part of the formulation. So lavender, eucalyptus, you know, cinnamon, myrrh, all that stuff is actually added to it. So topicals are actually very rich in all of these terpenes. And, you know, it depends on what the blend is, but it's a great source of terpenes for topical therapy.
I wanted to add a little bit. So I mentioned earlier about how certain terpenes can be antidotes to mitigate the effects of Delta-9s. So Ethan Russo studied and came out with an article in the British Journal of Psychopharmacology about how limonene and pinene, which are found in orange juice, lemonade, pine nuts, pistachio nuts, black pepper is also another one that's different. The limonene and the pinene actually balance the delta 9. So if you get too uncomfortable, I always tell people to keep some orange juice on hand, because if you get too uncomfortably high, drink your orange juice and you can feel better. You still have the body high. It just mitigates the delta 9 heady effects of it. But that's one way that it can be used medically, I guess, if you're too high.
Gee, I always thought it was just the sugar.
My question for the panel, so we have medical marijuana, the awareness of medical marijuana has emerged outside of the medical authority. And so if they're encouraging plant-based medicine, then how do you see the future for marijuana as a whole plant when the medical authority is very pharmaceutical-based, pill-based?
Well, I think that the future depends on the laws and the legislation that gets passed. As we're progressing, we have states now that have medical marijuana where you cannot smoke it. And so it's very much state by state and county by county, even in, say, California, for what you can do. So the future of the whole plant, you know, even under 502, where you can still go to jail for having a single plant under legalization, the future of the plant is uncertain. I think we have to fight for it, and it's up to us to really work as advocates of our plant and as activists and make sure that we get good laws that protect personal freedoms, keep people out of prison, and protect it as a medicine.
I'd like to just add something to, states' rights and what's going on. Something happened pretty spectacular 2 weeks ago. The National Conference of State Legislators met here in Seattle last 2 weeks, and they passed a resolution to have the federal government get off the backs of states' rights to control what goes on for marijuana in the state. So this was actually monumental that happened, and almost nobody knows about it.
All right, another one of my gurus here when I was getting into industrial hemp, Chris Conrad, was there with the Business Alliance for Commerce in Hemp. And there were no businesses yet, so he understood. He saw the future and what was going to be needed and how important unity amongst the hemp businesses was, and it's the reason we're here today.
Yay. Hey, thanks, Patty. Thanks, everybody, for being here, too. And thank you for Hempodium being the stage that really brings out the discussions. I have kind of two questions. One of them I don't know enough of it to really ask it very well, but maybe one of you knows, which is I heard that there was a study out of Humboldt State University that kind of suggested that telling someone they were smoking indica or sativa had as much of an effect on them, the response, as actually giving them indica versus sativa. But I don't really know the study, so maybe one of you knows that. My other question really, though, is the American Herbal Pharmacopoeia, and I think Ron probably has some ideas about that, what the significance of them coming forward. If you could just bring that up and explain to people what that is and why that's so important.
Yeah, the American Herbal Pharmacopoeia is a series of books about a lot of the, this may be the 40th one, the one about cannabis, 30th, 40th one. And it's an effort to standardize a lot of the herbs that are used in medicines and used herbally, let's just say, in America. So there's one for the salvias and all the different things that go in, teas and ointments and balms and things. And to part of the normalization process is to look at cannabis this way. And they were a bit resistant to do this, but they finally saw that it would work, and they got a lot of really good experts to help them out and build this. It's a great resource. American Herbal Pharmacopoeia, it's $45 hard copy, and you can order it from Scotts Valley, California. They'll mail it to you. I didn't think there's any postage. So. Yeah, it's a really good reference, and I get it now. It'll be in PDF before too long, because that's the way they do it, but they'll sell you a PDF for cheaper.
And that just happened last year, with the monograph just came out last year, reinstating cannabis as part of the American pharmacopoeia.
As far as like the study that you were talking about, the power of suggestion psychologically is so strong, I'm sure that you could tell them all kinds of things, like they were taking acid and they would act like they were on acid. So I think that the power of suggestion is really strong, and I can imagine that probably has some validity, but I'm going to check on that, though.
I would like to see this, too, and I absolutely believe that would be the result. The biggest problem with trying to do research about this is going to be separating the power of suggestion from everything else. Does a patient receive the relief from medical cannabis that they are getting from the medical cannabis, or is it that they're getting the relief they expect to get from it? And this is only enhanced, this problem is only enhanced by the different aromas of cannabis. Now someone will smell a bag of cannabis and go, without even smoking it, and go, this is going to give me the relief I seek. I'd like to go through and get a bunch of reverse ones, ones that smell like a certain thing and do the opposite. Because you could breed these, you know, we're not stuck with what we have. But that'd be really fun to go around and try to, you might even need these somehow to do an experiment where, yeah, first of all, you could not use anyone who'd ever smoked cannabis before. You know, it's going to be difficult. And you can't use paid people because they're paid to do it. So it gets difficult.
For 5 years, I've been asking that question. And got the best answer that you said, is it suggestive or is there something chemically? Is there anything objectively that I can take to 360 and say, is this sativa and indica? And the answer is no. I asked Dr. Elsa Hooley that analyzes every seed piece of marijuana seeds federally, locally, municipally in the United States, tens of thousands a week. He says there's absolutely different. Just like he said, there's no difference in the gene pool that we can see that we can analyze objectively yet. I'm telling you, at this point, other than subjective, it's all snake oil. Now there's some research that might pin some terpenes with some other ones, but hasn't been released yet, and we're on the verge, we're on the eve of that happening. That's going to happen, apparently, but right now, there's nothing genetically, there's nothing chemically that we can tell the difference. It's all snake oil when it comes to sativa and indica, and the people that are in the know that. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. It's snake oil to differentiate any weed in the United States between sativa and indica at this point. There may be evidence coming on the terpenes, so that means we're going to have to define what is
indica. I don't think so. I think that the terpenes have a lot to do with whether it's indica or like you get the effects of indica or sativa. I feel that, you know, if it says something has more limonene, I feel that it definitely is much more uplifting when I smoke it versus when it has myrcene in it, where it makes me want to sit on the couch and do nothing. So, I mean, does it need to have the word sativa or indica? Or maybe one day we'll be able to, like, find terpenes. I want this amount of terpenes in my product or this much limonene or this much myrcene. And then I can be able to, like, tailor as to how I want to feel.
I'm with Rob. I think this, the way that you're talking about sativas and indicas there is an aberration of history, and the way they talked about sativas and indicas 100 years ago, or botanically how it actually was, is a different understanding of what those words mean. Okay, we got. I'm sorry. I have one more question, and I forgot about one more question, and then we can wrap this up.
So I'd like to hear what you guys know about non-THC plant derivatives from cannabis. Indigenous people have been using root balls. There's no THC present. The terpene levels very low, if at all, but there's some alkaloids. These are very hard to test for because you don't have a control, because you don't know what they are, because science isn't what we think it is when it comes to testing. So are any of you working on that? Do you know people who are?
I have met a couple of individual patients who have worked to derive the alkaloids of the cannabis plant. And to be perfectly honest, the science is a little bit over my head. But from what I understand, you know, alkaloids are the basic chemical properties of any drug. And you can have opiate alkaloids, cannabis alkaloids. The work is being done. I just think it's in the future. And I think that's what makes this so exciting. But I did once personally try a tincture dropper full of alkaloids, and the intense effects, both medicinally and psychologically, it was kind of out of this world. And it made my body feel very much different, and I've been, you know, had a relationship with cannabis for a long time. And I would say the same thing. I once took a shot of terpene water that had been extracted at Green Lion Farms. And we had just medicated and, you know, was feeling kind of normal, and took the drink of terpene water, and it was literally like turning up the dial 10 times. And so there is an entourage effect to all this, and we're still learning about it. And so it may not be indica or sativa, but it is happy and euphoric, or sleepy and content, you know, and those aren't anything to be ignored. Those are vital, and that's what makes our plant unique.
Have you talked to Horatio, who makes the terptini? Oh yeah, he makes a terptini. He's out of Canada, and he does a lot of work with terpenes as well. And you're right, it's pretty intense, in a different way than when you smoke with THC.
If you want to know the cutting edge of what's going on, tune into Hash Church.
Hash
9
Church.
9 o'clock every Sunday Pacific time. Next week will be the 47th in a row or something. Mark Bubble Man Richardson does this out of Vancouver, and it's really far out.
You can find it on Bubble Man's World on YouTube, and it's become like a huge cult following, and it's super science-oriented, and you're right, it's definitely the best place to get your cannabis science knowledge.
All right, any you got about 2 minutes, any 30 seconds for each of you in a closing thought, or if you want.
I'll say one thing here. Not all terpenes are good terpenes. Yeah, I mean, they all have their purpose. But just like all cannabis is not good for each individual, not all terpenes are. And maybe that's the reason why cannabis is not one kind of cannabis that everybody likes. You know, there's, yeah.
I would say on Washington politics, brief side note, you know, for patients, we have had a rough year. We've had a rough couple of years, actually. But it's important that we don't stop fighting for our rights and for the right of every person to grow a plant and to enjoy a plant and not to go to jail. So let's not get content. There's a great industry here, but we still need to free the plant and free the people. Thank you. Yeah.
And I would say that if you're interested in terpenes, definitely, if you consider yourself a cannabis snob and you're interested in cannabis science, look into terpenes. Expand your knowledge, because it's really, really exciting.
I would also like to say that we have a long way to go, but I think it's really important that we breathe in the moment and celebrate our victories. You know, we added PTSD to our list of illnesses this year. We literally, this topical legislation that happened was the first chipping away of the Controlled Substances Act in the state of Washington here. This is a big deal, and so just take a moment and celebrate these things as we continue to fight for the total prohibition, total emancipation of cannabis.
Yeah. All right, let's thank our panel. Big round of applause. Wooder, Allison Grayson, Wes Abney, and Robert Count Clark.